very moment.
A sudden lightning storm frightened the crowd and the execution was postponed. Dupre was later pardoned and attributed his miraculous survival to the angel coin. For centuries, angel coins have been the center of countless good luck stories. And now good luck is yours. In a world first, Govmint.com is releasing magnificent 1 ounce pure silver angel coins at an historic low and surprisingly affordable price. These dazzling silver angel coins are only available on a first-come, first-served basis, so call immediately. 1-800-600-0438. These 2014 angels are legal tender and 1 ounce of pure silver. Minted in London, England, they magnificently depict St. Michael slaying a fire-breathing dragon with Queen Elizabeth on the reverse. Lock in your historic low price. 1-800-600-0438. 1-800-600-0438.
It's the Friday edition of the Lars Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion brought to you by Oric. 7 locally owned and operated Oric home centers in the St. Louis area. You can also find them online at O-R-E-C-K. That's Oric.com. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are both on vacation, so Tim Weiland and Johnny Lomax are sitting here and now joining us for a little discussion about movies and showbiz and what's going on in the clubs. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Joe Hipperson.
Oh, yes.
Hello, Joe.
Yes, yes, yes. What's up, Paul Harris? How you doing, sir?
Happy Friday to you.
Well, and a happy, wonderful, beautiful Friday to you.
Yeah.
No, it is, man. It's a beautiful Friday. You know, it's just cold enough. It's just warm enough. It's perfect.
It has been a nice couple of days here, and I wish I could say that this is going to be the way it's going to be going forward, but I've seen the long-range forecast.
Understood. Which means I'll be happy because I'll be bundled up and snuggly, and you'll be griping and complaining.
That's exactly right. I also know that this is not a good Friday for movies. You have one that you're going to diss. I have one that I'm going to diss. I'm going to let you go first.
Okay. Well, there is a movie out today called Pompeii, and it was directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. It's directed by the guy, if I know my history right, I believe he was a genius who at one time gave us a movie called Event Horizon, which is just stellar. But lately, not so much. And I think the beginning and the end with him started when he did the first Resident Evil movie, and it just, he did one of the Alien vs. Predator movies. The guy, he's like modern-day Rennie Harlan, and that's not a compliment to a director. It's just not. So Pompeii tells the story of Pompeii, and I hate to have to say the word spoiler, but I'm going to. Spoilers. It's about a giant volcano. It's about Vesuvius.
Yes, you do not have to say spoiler about something that happened thousands of years ago, Joe.
Exactly. But here's the deal, man. This movie is essentially, and I've heard other critics kind of go in this direction, I'm not lifting other people's material, but it's very much like you're watching Gladiator with elements of Titanic, because you have these young kids. You've got a guy from the wrong side of the tracks or the wrong side of the mountain, basically a poor kid who falls in love with the rich girl. And the rich girl is you know, she's high and mighty and she's uppity and whatnot, but they fall in love, and it's a forbidden love. And the bad guy in the movie, played by Keith Sutherland, with the worst wannabe British accent ever, doesn't want them to be together. So it's love torn apart. And he's a fighting man. He's a gladiator, and he wants to fight for his freedom. But then something happens. There's a rumbling on top of the giant volcano. Now, if this were not, you can't say it's a true story. I mean, it's based on an actual fact. Yes, this volcano did erupt. These people got smoted, or whatever the words might be when you get erupted with flames and molten lava. But the point is, it's not really, it's so cookie cutter, Paul. I mean, it's a 98-minute film about a huge, epic tragedy, but it doesn't seem to have any weight to it because they want you to be so invested in this forbidden love.
Yeah.
And do you think they're going to make it out alive?
Well, yeah. I'm not going to. You know, we've talked about this before, Joe, when they take movies like this or Titanic or Pearl Harbor, and instead of making them about that actual event, which is dramatic enough in itself, they got to turn it into a love story about two people, or maybe sometimes it's a love triangle, like in Pearl Harbor. And to me, right, that cheapens the importance of these events, which, as I said, were pretty dramatic.
Right, and you're waiting, and it's sick and it's sad, really, but when I saw Pearl Harbor, I was waiting for the attack on Pearl Harbor. I went into the movie because I thought, hey, look at the marquee, guys. It says Pearl Harbor. I'll bet you it's about the attack on Pearl Harbor. That lasted for like 15 minutes, and I was stuck with 2 hours of Ben Affleck crying and Josh Hartnett crying, and it just didn't make any sense. This movie is being released in standard as well as 3D. And let me just give you a huge warning. 3D, if it's done right, it can kind of work. But most of the time, the image looks a bit darker than it needs to. It looks a little grayed out. And when this film's climax kicks in and everything is black smoke, you'll think that the projector shut down because you can't make anything out. Huh. And it's a cheap tactic because you just need these 3D fireballs to fly at you. And you're like, oh, my gosh, I've seen better special effects in video games. This movie is pathetic. The love story is just ridiculous. The dialogue, honestly, I would not be surprised if they hired grade school kids to talk about boyfriends and girlfriends, and they used that for the dialogue of the film.
Wow.
Pompeii is a huge waste of time. I'm giving it a 0.5 out of 10.
Wow, less than a 1.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is about the giant, you know, the volcano, the whole explosion. But you know what would have been more interesting? And I hate to even say this, but if they would have really taken a Titanic approach and showed me people, I believe it was in 1599 that they first discovered all the bodies in Pompeii and all the ash. If they would have showed me people discovering this city and discovering how it went down, and then maybe a fictitious little love story just kind of creeps in, that would have been kind of interesting. Instead, it's a cheap throwaway. I would rather watch Sharknado marathons than watch this.
Did you say that Kiefer Sutherland is trying to pull off a British accent?
Yes.
Why would he be doing a British accent in a movie that takes place in Rome or in Pompeii, actually?
I don't know. Maybe because somebody showed him Gladiator and said, hey, we're going to rip off a lot of Gladiator. And Richard Harris is in this. And, you know, he was Caesar. And you're going to be a guy that kind of plays a role like that. And you figure, oh, okay, I guess it's how the Romans talk.
Wow. Well, I actually thought that my movie was going to be the lowest rated movie of the week. But I don't think I can go lower than a 0.5 on a scale of 10.
Oh, don't say that, man. You know I wanted to love this movie. Both these screenings. Oh, are you serious?
You know, I was surprised you didn't make it the other night to the screening of this movie, 3 Days to Kill. This is a movie that stars Kevin Costner, who's been on a nice run lately, mostly in supporting roles, which I think is pretty much where he should stay. Not that I don't think he's a good actor. I like seeing Kevin Costner on screen. In the good movies that he's done, I've always thought he was doing a fine job. But in this one, he plays a CIA agent who he's not really an agent, he's an assassin. He's like one of the top CIA assassins. And he's involved in a story that, he's getting sick. And he finds out that he essentially is going to die from whatever this rare disease is that he has. And they give him 3 months to live. And so naturally he goes back to try to get back together again with his ex-wife and their now teenage daughter, who he hasn't seen much. Now, anybody who has seen any movies in the last 20 years knows anytime the hero is going to try to get back with his ex-wife and his teenage daughter, that at some point the teenage daughter is going to get into trouble and our hero is going to have to save her. This is what we now refer to as the Liam Neeson rule. Right? Well, in this case, Kevin Costner does have to get involved with his wife and his daughter, but he's also recruited for one last job by another CIA agent, played by Amber Heard, who vamps it up big time and for some reason has access to fast cars and secret medicine, and she's going to give Kevin Costner this fantastic remedy vaccine, this shot that will, it's not a vaccine, it's a shot that will save his life, but first he has to carry out this last assassination of a bad guy by the name of Wolf, and the Wolf has a guy guarding him named the Albino. Does this sound like I'm actually talking about a movie anybody would want to see, Joe? Wait.
No, it's like you're talking about Taken with a little bit of Crank, and, I mean, I'm confused. I thought this would be a really cool kind of film.
Yeah, you know what? They should give an award to the people who made the previews and the trailer and the commercials for this because they make it seem like it's an interesting action movie. And, you know, usually I don't spoil movies for people. I'm going to spoil every bit of this because you should not go see it. I'll tell you some more about what's wrong with this movie. This guy is a hired killer, and he's one of the top hired killers in the world, and there's violence, and he gets involved in things that are absolutely horrible. Head heads taken off by elevators, trains crashing into people. I mean, there's a lot of gory stuff that goes on in this movie. And then we take a break so Kevin Costner can teach his teenage daughter how to ride a bicycle because she's 17 years old and never learned that skill. Oh, and by the way, she has to go to the prom. This all takes place in Paris. She has to go to the prom with her French boyfriend from the school that she's going to in Paris. He's invited her to the prom, and she doesn't know how to dance. So we have scenes of Kevin Costner teaching her how to dance. Here, honey, stand on my feet, and I'll show you some of the steps. And they then dance to his ex-wife's favorite song, I Want to Make It With You by David Gates and Bread from 1971.
It's just so convenient that all these things would happen at the exact same time he's recruited for one last job.
This is a movie where I think two different people walked in to pitch a movie to the executive at the studio at the same time. Hey, I've got a movie about a man trying to reconnect with his family in Paris, and there's a love story there, and he's a loving dad. Unfortunately, he's not doing well, and it's his last days on Earth because he's dying, and there's a romantic movie to be made there. Okay, what's the other pitch? The other pitch is a CIA hitman who has to help out and kill a guy by the name of Wolf and his assistant named the Albino. And then the exec says, you know what? I don't have enough money for two movies. Let's make this movie with both plot lines at the same time.
Oh, yeah. That's like the same. It's the next formula for A Day in the Life. That's brilliant. Gosh.
This movie was directed by a guy by the name of McGee, who did the two Charlie's Angels movies. He did Terminator Salvation. Was that any good, Joe?
Are you serious?
No.
It was a PG-13 Terminator film, Paul.
He did We Are Marshall, and he did a Reese Witherspoon action romance comedy called This Means War. One of those that shows up on cable channels every single night for a month, and no one watches it. This movie has a horrible plot. It has horrible acting. Kevin Costner puts on his gruff, gravelly, Harrison Ford-like voice, so he sounds like this in every scene. That's not how he sounds in any of the other movies he's making now. His voice hasn't mutated into that. I don't know why he made that bad acting choice. I'm going to blame the director. I'm going to guess McGee told him to do that, because the rest of the movie is completely the director's fault. It is cut together in a way that makes everything way too haphazard. The action sequences happen for no reason and are so poorly edited, you can't tell who's doing what to whom. It is a disaster from start to finish. And when I walked out of there on Wednesday night, as you know, the local movie promotion company always has somebody there who wants to get, just a little quick feedback from some of the...
Yeah, hey, so, what you think? Yeah, you had a good time, right?
Exactly. So I always go up and volunteer my opinion because I feel it's my responsibility. We get press screening tickets. I'm going to give them some immediate feedback, but I won't really give the full review until I get on the radio on Friday afternoons with you. I went up to her and I said, write down these two words on your pad. Indescribably bad.
Oh, man.
Now, I know I just spent 5 minutes describing the movie and how bad it is, but that was my first reaction. Halfway through this movie, I thought, can I walk out of here with no one seeing me? No, I have to stay. I have to stay to the end of this movie. It is, when we look back at the end of the year on the worst movies of the year, it's going to be Pompeii versus 3 Days to Kill. And I guarantee you, next year, when we talk about the Razzie Awards, this movie is going to win. It is horrible. I'm not giving it a 0.5. I can't beat that. I'm giving it a 0.6. I was really going to give it a 1, but I didn't know we could go into fractions and decimals here.
I didn't know we could until I went to Pompeii.
This is a movie that no one should go see, and I hope that no one goes to see it, so that we can dissuade the people who made this movie from ever making a movie again. That's how bad it is.
Wow.
I would rather see A Good Day to Die Hard again than watch this movie. That's how bad it is, Joe.
Oh, my God. Wow. So it's really the only option for people. If you want to see, I'm just going to put it out there. You want to see a good movie this weekend and you haven't gone to the movies in a while, I'm going to say it again. The Lego Movie. I'm just going to put it out there one more time.
I know. I think people are going to go see that. It certainly won't have any competition for number one at the box office this weekend. Neither one of these movies is going to open, and I think they're probably going to. The movies we're talking about, they're so bad, they could close before the light from the projector hits the screen. Don't be surprised if you do go to either of these movies, if halfway through the management comes in and says, well, you know what, we decided to turn the projector off. We're hurting the screen by putting this on there. Wow.
And so I guess if you really want to get away from it all and you want to be completely alone, pick any movie theater and go see Pompeii or 3 Days to Kill.
Yeah, I think you'll be very, very alone. You can get a nice nap. Now, there's one other movie thing I got to ask you about before we get to the clubs for this weekend. Have I ever talked on this show about a movie that Robert Redford did in the early 70s called The Hot Rock?
No.
Okay. I watched this again recently with my daughter. As I told you, when she was home for winter break, I tried to show her some of my favorite movies that are not really all that well known. The Hot Rock is a heist movie that stars Robert Redford and George Segal and Ron Liebman and Paul Sand and Zero Mostel and Moses Gunn. It is about Robert Redford gets out of jail and immediately gets recruited to try to put together a crew and a way to steal this big diamond that an African nation's corrupt official in New York wants to get his hands on. And he has to provide them with the material so they can do it. And the heist goes wrong from the first moment. And the rest of the movie is them trying to get, they have to go steal back the rock from other places and other situations. It just keeps escalating and escalating and escalating and keeps getting funnier and funnier and funnier. And Robert Redford plays it completely straight. He does not give off that he's in a comedy, which, by the way, is the way you're supposed to do comedy. Don't act like you're doing something funny. But the stuff that goes on in this movie and what happens to them and the hole that they keep digging for themselves over and over and over again right up through the end is really, really good. It's called The Hot Rock. I believe it's from 1972. You may see it and think, wow, this is a little bit dated, but it is really worth your while. It's one of those lost treasures that never gets talked about in when people talk about Robert Redford. And from what I've heard about All Is Lost from people like Frank on this show, you're much better off watching a lost treasure of Robert Redford than his most recent work.
All right. I appreciate the recommendation. If anyone's got their calendar out, I want to throw this one to you. May 26, 2017. On May 26, 2017, The Lego Movie 2 will be released in theaters. I'm dead serious. It was greenlit and officially put out today. They launched the release date of May 26, 2017. And if you were a fan of Anchorman 2, and very few people walked out thinking, God, I really wish Anchorman 2 had been longer. If you're one of the people in the minority that thought there was more to Anchorman 2, you're 100% right. And starting February 28th, for 1 week only, in certain select theaters, they're going to be issuing Anchorman 2, the R-rated extended cut. And they're hyping it because it has 763 new jokes that you never saw in the first version of Anchorman 2. Plus, it's R-rated, so they're really, you know, going below the belt. If you're a big fan of Anchorman, Anchorman 2, and you want to give it another go, it's kind of cool that they're doing this, but it's being released on DVD and Blu-ray on April 1st. So if you can't wait all of March to see it again and you want to see it from a different point of view, Anchorman 2, the R-rated extended cut with 763 new jokes, hitting theaters February 28th for 1 week only.
But, Joe, what I understand about that is that Adam McKay, the director, and Will Ferrell, the star, they had, when they were shooting the movie, they had everybody improvising and doing alternate takes of things. And so they originally intended to put it out as kind of a different version on a DVD set. But then the studio said, okay, we'll give you the money for that extra time and effort, but you're going to have to do a theatrical release. And what they've done is they've edited so that it is not really the same movie you saw before. They essentially have replaced all the jokes in the first one with other jokes that they did at the same time that are, to earn the R rating, much raunchier. So I think people who think this might be just, you know, outtakes and alternate versions of a couple of scenes will be surprised if they go back and see it, because from what I've read, it's a completely different movie. Same plot, same characters, but the lines are completely different.
Exactly. The lines are different, and the jokes, if you've seen the movie more than once, I'm guilty. I saw Anchorman 2 more than once. So there are certain lines that I like to repeat, and I think are really funny. I'm looking forward to them being completely different. Also, there were certain plot points and certain threads they decided to cut out of Anchorman 2, and in this version, they are replacing them and putting them back in. There's a rumor, spoilers, there's a rumor that the whole blind gag could be completely removed, and a brand new thread in the plot will be seen in the R-rated extended cut.
Have you ever
I won't know for sure until I see it.
Have you ever heard of this before?
Then I've never heard of them putting a movie out with a completely different edit, except for, like, you know, they do it on DVD all the time.
A director's
cut.
Done
it, you know, Ridley Scott did it with Alien when they re-released Alien. He released his director's cut. He's cut Blade Runner like five different times in five different versions, but they've never done it in this fashion before. So it'd be interesting to see how many people buck up to go and see it, which is probably why they're only doing it in select theaters and probably why they're only doing it for 1 week, because then they can do their amount of showings to the amount of theaters and make it look like a success.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. All right.
I got a couple of clubs and concerts. You want them?
Yes.
All right, starting tonight, Celebration Day, a tribute to Led Zeppelin at the Pageant, Optimus Rex at the Firebird, the Avid Brothers at the Peabody, the Freight Hoppers over at Focal Point, Strange Fellas at the Heavy Anchor, the Pat Sajak Assassins at the Schlafly Taproom, the Bathhouse Boys at Cusimano's Pizza, the VCRs at the Old Rock House. Tomorrow, Judas Beast over at Pops, Skeleton Witch at the Firebird, We Butter the Bread with Butter playing over at Fubar, Hazard to Your Booty at the Gramophone, Tiger Rider at the Heavy Anchor, and Travis Tritt at Lumiere Place. And last but not least, all right, I have got five concerts. Four are absolutely real. One is completely fake. Are we ready to play our game?
We are.
Diarrhea Planet, Saturday at Off-Broadway. Elizabeth McQueen, Saturday at the Demo. Kicks and Licks, Friday at 2720 Cherokee. Red Fruit Loops, Friday at Lemons. Candy Coated Evil, Saturday at Pops.
All right, we're going to go to the man who's filling in for Eon the Peon on the board today, Johnny Lomax.
The first choice was Diarrhea Planet.
That's what he said.
Did I hear that correctly?
That's correct.
I'm going to go Red Fruit Loop. As much as I'd like to go that way, I'm thinking Red Fruit Loop.
All right. Tim Weiland filling in for Dan Strauss.
I think I'm going to go with Elizabeth McQueen.
No, there's no chance you guys are right. It's Diarrhea Planet. I know Joe, and it's 100% Diarrhea Planet.
You know, I've been doing really good. I've been on a streak for a long time. Paul, you don't know me that well. Looks like Johnny is the man. Red Fruit Loops is the fake
man. Yes! Damn it!
So sorry, my friend. I'll talk to you guys next week. I'm Joe Hipperson for the Big 550 KTRS Hip on Entertainment.
Thank you, Joe.
See you, Joe.
Nice job. Joe is brought to you every week by Auric. Seven locally owned and operated Auric home centers in the St. Louis area and online at OREC.com. You know what that means? That means there's actually a band called Diarrhea Planet.
Yeah, that's the sad part.
Wow.
It was too obvious to me. It was too obvious.
Wow. It's 4:37 at the Big 550.
Meep, meep.
Tim, how are the roads?
Well, they're working with an accident now on eastbound 30, east of New Sugar Creek, that has a lane blocked, and traffic is backed up pretty well behind that. We do have slow traffic on westbound 40. The usual spots, Kings Highway through McCausland, 270 through Mason. Off the pace, we'll call it Boone's Crossing to the Boone Bridge. But, boy, from Lake St. Louis Boulevard up through Highway 70, things are really stacked up. On eastbound 40 downtown, you're stretching from Union Station to the Poplar Street Bridge. On eastbound 270, things are really heavy there from 370 through New Florissant. And just off the pace, we'll call it. It's very crowded, but it looks like it's all moving pretty well on southbound 270 from Page down through Doherty Ferry. This traffic report brought to you by Argosy Casino Alton. It's the Argosy preferred card at Argosy Casino Alton, where you can win instantly, earn comps, get free slot play, offers, and much, much more. That's my kind of rewards. From the Golden Oak Lending Traffic Desk, I'm Tim Weiland on the Big 550 KTRS.
Feel the warm sand beneath your toes on Oahu. Smell the flowers and see the brilliant colors of Kauai. Picture yourself strolling the black sand beaches on the Big Island, overlooking the majestic but gentle volcanoes on Maui. If you have ever dreamed of visiting Hawaii, this is the trip to take with YMT Vacations, offering monthly departures to paradise. Experience the warm tropical breezes like no other place on earth. Let YMT personally escort you through Hawaii on their 13-day four-island tour. Prices start at only $1,748, which includes taxes, inter-island airfare, beautiful hotels, and escorted sightseeing on every island. Explore Pearl Harbor, the Wailua River, Fern Grotto, and so much more. Call YMT Vacations today at 1-888-817-8360. Low-cost airfare is available, too. That's 1-888-817-8360.
It is a biting, sharp, fiercely funny play about a young novelist returning home at holiday time to talk about the story she's written about her family, which is not easy sledding.
Stephen Wolf, artistic director at The Rep, discussing Other Desert Cities.
This play, Other Desert Cities, was heralded as the best new play by the New York Times last year. The story implicates the family and tells some family secrets. Secrets don't necessarily play well with all of the family.
Things get bumpy when a promising young novelist returns home to get her family's approval of her newest work. Politics, lies, and regrets collide in this Pulitzer Prize-nominated play.
It is a powerhouse play, powerful story, strong family emotions. It is full of wit, it is clever, it's funny, it is unforgettable, it's powerful theater.
The Repertory Theater of St. Louis. For tickets to Other Desert Cities playing February 12th through March 9th, call 968-4925 or visit repstl.org.
Hi, I'm Tom Strive, founder of Strive Electric and Strive Media Systems. Our mission here at the Strive Companies is to create opportunities through developing lasting relationships. We do this by treating our customers with the utmost consideration while providing them with competitive pricing, attention to detail, and superior quality. No matter the size of the job, our customers will have peace of mind knowing their project is in good hands. From home inspections to ensure your home is safely up to code to upgrading your main electrical service, changing a fixture to adding lighting around the home, Strive Electric has the answer for all your home electrical needs. From simply hanging a TV on the wall to designing a full home automated system, security cameras around the home, or a simply monitored system, Strive Media Systems is who you want to call. So next time you have questions about any of the electrical systems in your home, join the Tribe and go with Strive. Give us a call today at 314-487-7474 or visit us on the web at striveelectric.com. That's STREIBelectric.com.
Hurt on a job or in a car wreck? Let the experienced lawyers at Brown & Brown help you. You know our law firm. My brother's a lawyer with the eye patch. At Brown & Brown, we can help you so you can concentrate on getting better. We'll take care of the rest. You can go to our website at brownlawoffice.com. Or to speak with an attorney, in Missouri, our phone number is all threes, 333-3333. In Illinois, our phone number is all eights, 888-8888. And always remember, at Brown & Brown, if you can't come to us, we'll come to you.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.
Stop into your local Chevy dealer to check out the 2014 Silverado, Cruze, Malibu, or Equinox, and take advantage of President's Day cash today.
It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. A guy by the name of Garrick Utley died yesterday. Garrick Utley was a newsman who you saw on TV all the time for over 35 years until he gave it up about 10 years ago or so. He was on NBC for a really, really long time. He was on the air when the Berlin Wall came down and various other major events. And then he left and went to ABC, and then he went to CNN. And he was at CNN when I had a chance to interview him here on the Big 550 KTRS. It was April 24th, 2001. He had just come out with kind of a memoir, his autobiography of his years in the television news business called You Should Have Been Here Yesterday. Now, the interview we did that day went on for quite a while, but I wanted to share with you just a couple of the stories that Garrick Utley told me that day.
I was based here for NBC in New York City, and I said, I want to go somewhere which is the supposed end of the world where there's no television. Well, you don't have to go, or you didn't have to go that far. You went down to Central America, tiny Belize on the Gulf of Mexico, just east of Guatemala, and we went up to a remote town near the Guatemalan border, and there was no TV system in the country, as you say, but the local entrepreneurs were putting up backyard satellite dishes, and they were stealing the signals off the satellites off North America. So there we were in a place that had no regular television. People didn't even know of the outside world, and yet every night they were sitting there watching Johnny Carson. It was amazing because you saw the impact of this thing called television via satellite and how it changed people's lives. There was a local merchant who was doing this, and he said, today, this morning, people were coming in asking for Mr. T breakfast cereal and Sears lawnmowers and stuff like that. Nobody had heard of them 2 weeks ago before the satellite started. The impact of TV.
And this was their only source of information about anything elsewhere in the world, right?
The only visual source. They had radio. They had a couple of flimsy newspapers. But it was when you opened that window to the world, the images coming in, that they could see how other people lived. They had read about it, perhaps. Occasionally, they had seen a movie. But now they could see it on a day-to-day basis, and we don't think about that much here in the United States, the impact of international satellite television. We certainly do at CNN with our global network,
right?
But it's enormous.
When television first started in the United States, the people in the movie industry said, uh-oh, we're going to be in trouble. People are going to stay home. They're not going to go to the movies. That actually happened in Belize, didn't it?
It did indeed, because there was one small movie theater in this town of 2,000 or 3,000 people, and it closed down. It closed down within a month after this TV satellite images started coming in. And remember, not only were they getting satellite for the first time, some of these homes didn't have electricity. We'd go out to these homes, very simple homes, and they had the TV hooked up to an automobile battery. And that's how they were getting Johnny Carson.
Wow. Now, what did the local government think of this? Because, after all, in small countries, they like to control their television as much as they can. And here was the great invader of North America, the United States, coming into their country without them having any say-so.
Well, some of the government officials we talked to didn't like it at all, because government officials like to have a lot of authority over their country. And they said it's not only the morality or the way we see the world that's being changed, it also pushes tremendous economic burdens on the government. Because people will say, well, why can't we have our roads paved the way they do in Dallas or in Dynasty? We don't have them paved with gold. We just want to have them paid. And sometimes that's beyond the reach of a poor country. They had a point. But there are other interesting things. People there in Belize were watching WGN, which is this big Chicago superstation, and that meant they watched the Chicago Cubs. And the Cubs became a national pastime. When the Cubs played in Wrigley Field, the streets empty. And in fact, when I was down there one day, I read that Queen Elizabeth was coming from England to visit one of her former colonies, but a bigger event was that Gary Matthews, then the Cub star, was coming on a state visit. That, again, was the impact of the television satellite.
Have you been back to Belize since you did that report?
I've been back once, and yes, they now have television, regular television, just as anybody else does.
Are they producing local TV, or is it still American imports?
A lot of American imports. There is some local TV, but it's a poor country. They can't afford to produce the kind of programs they can buy and rerun or get off the satellites. But the point is that it's a global village now, or I shouldn't say it's a global village. It's a lot of villages, and all the villages in the world are now connected globally, and we're all plugged into that same network.
Now, let's go back to 1989.
Sure.
When you anchored a bulletin that the borders were open in Berlin, and the Berlin Wall was obviously, the crack was more than just apparent, it was widening every day. When you're sitting at NBC News, and I'm guessing you were in New York doing that bulletin, as a reporter, as a person especially who's been covering foreign news for so many years on the international beat, do you get the itch? You're looking at that and you're thinking to yourself, okay, Brokaw's there. I want to be there. I want to be in the midst of this big story right now.
Absolutely, right now. It was a Thursday. I remember it clearly as if it's today. It was a Thursday in November of 1989. Tom Brokaw, we knew something was going to happen dramatically. It was going to happen in Berlin. Brokaw had gone over for his nightly newscast and was broadcasting, preparing to broadcast that night. And I was scheduled to go the next day because I was doing some weekend broadcasts for NBC. But here we were Thursday afternoon, New York time, and we get a call from Tom, who had been at a news conference in East Berlin where the communists had said, in effect, yes, we're going to open up the wall. And there was a lot of confusion. They couldn't believe what they had heard, but they confirmed the story. story, and we went on the air with a bulletin and announced that to the nation, the first network or news organization of that to do that in the United States, and then we got Tom on the phone. Now, here's another little aspect or story about technology. Normally, somebody who was in East Berlin, and the Berlin Wall was still up, of course, and there were no direct phone communications from the east to the west, would have had to spend an hour coming back through the customs formalities and report from West Berlin. But Tom had something called a cell phone. One of the first.
Mm-hmm.
And he unflipped. We didn't unflip it in those days. One of these bulky, sort of like an old World War II walkie-talkie size. But
With a big box connected to it, right?
Big box connected to it. But yeah. He just powered that up, dialed the number in or punched the numbers in, and we were talking live on television via cell phone as the Berlin Wall was opening up and crumbling.
And you later did get to go and cover that story in person, right?
I went over there because I'd spent time in Berlin as a university student. I had lived there as a correspondent for NBC, and that again was one of those momentous events which a foreign correspondent never forgets.
You must have just been walking around saying, "You know what? I used to live in this city. This was a day I never thought would come."
It is true. And I'll tell you one of the impressions that struck me. There are so many impressions of the emotion. That it's rare that we sense this kind of emotion when literally millions of people were being freed and hundreds of thousands were coming through the wall. Now, here are people who've lived behind the Iron Curtain, behind the Berlin Wall all their lives. They've been locked in, literally. Now, they're aware of what life in the West, the capitalist West, the prosperous West, the free West was about, but they only got it from occasional newspapers that got through, and they could watch West German television, which they could get in East Berlin if the authorities didn't know they were watching it quietly in their homes at night. So they had a visual image, but what was it like? So they come through the wall on this weekend, and where do they go? Do they go to the museums? Do they go to the parks? No. They all went to the main shopping street.
Uh-huh.
From one side of the main shopping boulevard in West Berlin, from one show window on one side of the shop window on the other side, they were pressing their noses literally against the glass to see for themselves that what they had heard about and thought about was true. It was the prosperity they wanted. That was the great luxury, as well as the personal and political freedom. And I'll never forget that image. And that's what people want.
And there is the great success of capitalism in the last century. You know, that's all these people wanted to be a part of, was the free open marketplace. And, hey, where can I get blue jeans?
Where can I get blue jeans? And where can I travel? And it's the sense of freedom, because we talk about freedom, and obviously political freedom, the right to vote, is so important. We cherish that in our democracy, and rightly so. But I remember talking to these East Germans, what are the things you really wanted? You know what was number one on the list? It wasn't to vote. The greatest freedom they wanted was to travel and see the
mm-hmm.
world.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people who are locked up really want to do. They wanted to travel and see, and they said, "We'll come back." Well, maybe the government leaders, the communists, didn't trust that they would come back. That's what they wanted. They wanted the goodies that the market system, capitalism, was providing in the West. And, yes, they wanted the freedom, not just to vote, but the freedom to lead their lives.
And, you know, diplomats are always given, and politicians at the high levels are always given credit for finally getting the Berlin Wall to come down. I always like to give a lot more credit to television, and in particular CNN, because it had been around for, I guess, 6, 7, 8 years by that point. And it's global... It's global reach, the fact that somebody could sit in a hotel room in Moscow and watch that, and there could be stolen videotapes or leaked videotapes, if you will, of these international newscasts showing them what the world outside their own borders was like. Don't you think television was a huge influence on the end of the Iron Curtain and the Berlin Wall?
It was a tremendous influence, and not just television. It was all communications technology basically has undermined the control of authority, political authority. Whether you're a Soviet leader, whether you're an East German communist, or even today in China, look at China. Here it is with the market reforms and they embracing so much capitalism and still trying to control communication. Well, they're not going to be able to do it totally. Television, the internet, fax machines, the message gets through, and you're absolutely right. It was this impact of these images that cannot be stopped because television knows no borders. And again, it's these satellites up there in orbit that they just look down on an Earth. That's all they're seeing down there. They're not seeing any Berlin walls. They're not seeing any borders. They're not seeing any customs agents. It all goes up, and it all comes back down.
That is the late, great Garrick Utley in a conversation I had with him on April 24th, 2001. He died yesterday at the age of 74 of prostate cancer. His book was a terrific read about his career, and those are just a couple of the stories that we covered in that conversation that day 13 years ago. I have the entire 40-minute conversation available as a podcast, as a download that you can listen to. If you go to the Paul Harris page of KTRS.com, you can click on it and listen to it and download it and enjoy it. What a pleasure talking to him. And he was one of those guys who, as soon as you heard that voice, as we were talking before, Tim, you trusted him. This guy was somebody you could trust. He was going to tell you the truth.
And he was an old-time news guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I liked also. Just he was back in that generation.
In the days when you actually went out somewhere where a story was happening and watched what happened and then told us what happened.
Yes.
That's not the way the news business works anymore. It's 4:53 at the Big 550. Meet me. Bill Cleveland coming up in a couple of minutes. First, let's go to the roads.
Well, it's been a tough ride on folks for on westbound 40 because you've got the normal slowdowns, Kings Highway, McCausland, 270. Well, now it's Ballas out through Maryville Center. It's pretty heavy from Long Road to the Boone Bridge, but, boy, it's really a slow stretch from Lake St. Louis Boulevard merging onto Highway 70. Westbound 70, you're going to find some slow pockets, Cave Springs through Highway 370, and then from Highway A to about Highway Z. Eastbound 270, you're jammed up from, I'd say, Missouri Bottom now through New Florissant. Downtown on eastbound 40 Union Station to the Poplar Street Bridge. Southbound 270, really slow between Page and Ladue. And then it's just some slow pockets, we'll call it, from Highway 40 down through Doherty Ferry. This traffic report is brought to you by Hammer Mill Paper. You've invested so much in your work. Don't you want it to be on the best paper? Try Hammer Mill Color Copy Digital and get noticed. Hammer Mill Color Copy Digital makes you look better. From the Golden Oak Lending Traffic Center, Tim Weiland on the Big 550 KTRS.
Hi, you can't see me because of radio, and I can't see you because I'm totally blind. My blindness doesn't hold me back, but I fight to stay awake during the day because I'm not sleeping through the night. Often I struggle to concentrate and just keep up. Sound familiar? You're not alone. But this is not a sleep disorder, it's actually 924. Learn about the link between total blindness and your symptoms. Visit learnmorenon24.com or call 855-856-2424.
How much time a week do you spend watching TV? More than you probably should? What if you could cut back just a fraction of that time to do something that could change your life, like learn another language? If learning a language appeals to you, you're listening to this station at the perfect time. Because Rosetta Stone is celebrating its Language for Life event with a life-changing offer. We're offering every caller an absolutely free demo. Yes, a free demo. To try your free demo now, you must call 1-800-400-1798. With Rosetta Stone, nothing stands in your way to learning a new language. No books, rote memorization, or boring drills. Quite simply, it's the fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. There's never been a better time to get started. Participate in the Language for Life event with a free demo from Rosetta Stone. Call 1-800-400-1798. For your free demo, call 1-800-400-1798. 1-800-400-1798.
Suffering from allergy congestion?
On my nature walks, I couldn't smell the flowers or breathe in the fresh spring air. Then I discovered Allegra D.
Allegra D decongests and depressurizes with a fast, non-drowsy antihistamine, plus a powerful decongestant for 24 hours of congestion-free breathing.
Now I don't just appreciate nature, I breathe it all in.
Allegra D. Stop suffering. Start breathing.
Look for Allegra D at the pharmacy counter. Starts working in 1 hour. Use only as directed. Visit Allegra.com.
Hi, Terry Hall here. Hey, Investing in Real Estate airs this Saturday at 3 p.m. This is the show that teaches you how to invest in real estate. Saturday at 3, I'll host interviews teaching you how to find money for your investments. The easiest way for a beginning real estate investor to make money, buying multifamily units and making six figures doing it. Join me, Terry Hall, at 3 p.m. this Saturday for Investing in Real Estate. That's Investing in Real Estate this Saturday at 3 p.m. right here on the Big 550 KTRS.
From downtown St. Louis, it's the Bill Cleveland segment, starring Bill Cleveland, along with Bruce Limprist and the All Boy Orchestra. Brought to you by Laclede Cab, your AM in the PM cab company, 314-652-3456. And now, here's Bill Cleveland.
Hello, everybody. Good afternoon.
Hi, Bill. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty great. How's everybody on this wonderful Friday? Hi,
just fine. Let me get a plug in. The Laclede Cab also has an app you can download to your phone. Just go to your Android or Apple app store and look for STL Taxi, and they'll give you all the information right there. Go ahead, Bill.
Absolutely. Well, we've got a little bit of a figure skating controversy, I guess, at the Winter Olympics this week. I guess there's a judge who has no place judging Olympic competition, causing a little bit of a stir, but I still thought it was nice to see Tonya Harding again.
Yeah.
And then we had the big bobsled gold medal that was decided by a tenth of a second. That was pretty wild. So to put it in perspective, that's the length of time between Justin Bieber's scandal. And the Daytona 500 coming up this weekend. That's always a good time. No surprise here, though. President Obama issued an executive order requiring all the drivers to carpool in one vehicle.
That seems uncalled for.
Looking out for the environment, I guess. And Finally, this afternoon, the audience is worn out. It's been a long week.
Yes.
Well, they're now saying that Charlie Sheen's porn star fiance is already married. Oh, mm-hmm. Sheen said it's not really that big of a deal. It's not like it's the first time she's had two guys at once.
Right. For a guy who's known for his threesomes.
That was for Tim Weiland.
Yeah.
The North Cleveland segment brought to you this afternoon by Laclede Cab, the AM and the PM Cab Company, and from downtown St. Louis, I'm Bill Cleveland, the Big 550 KTRS.
Thank you, Bill.
See you later, Bill.
Yeah. As I pointed out yesterday, Charlie, when I was talking with Kate Mahan, I pointed this out. Charlie has no problem with three ways when it's two women. I wonder how he'd feel about the wife and the husband.
I don't know.
That would be two men, one woman. That'd be his new show. You know, he did Two and a Half Men.
Yeah.
This would be Two and a Half Marriages. No problem. The post office has announced some of the people they're considering to put on stamps because they want to get a younger demographic involved in stamp collecting. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Dora the Explorer, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the Peanuts characters, Charlton Heston. Oh, the kids love Charlton Heston.
Yeah, right.
And John Lennon, which is weird because up until now you had to be an American to get on a stamp. They're also talking about Wilt Chamberlain. That's the stamp that you do not want to lick. This stamp's already been on 20,000 other letters. It sticks by itself. Trust me. Coming up on 5 o'clock, the Harris Challenge, Kate Meehan in Hollywood, and, knuckleheads in the news ahead on KTRS St. Louis.